From the Growmark FS Learning Center outside of Bloomington, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Jackie Vick. She's at Stuart Peterson. We'll also take a look at what's been happening with the agricultural weather forecast with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated. Along the way, I'll talk you through the brand new simulator that Growmark uses to train its applicators, or the drivers of those herbicide application systems that you see, which look a lot like a great big bug moving through the fields of the Midwest and parts of Canada all throughout the year. And we'll do that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, you're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the Growmark Learning Center outside of Bloomington, where this morning I got to sit inside a simulator of a rogator. Those are the big machines that are used to apply farm herbicides across fields. It was a whole lot of fun. We'll hear more about that a bit later in the program. But now let's turn our attention to what's happening in the marketplace. We're joined by Jackie Vakes. She's with Stuart Peterson. Hey, thanks for being with us, Jackie. Appreciate you being on today.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
So let's start with yesterday's USDA report and how the market has reacted. What do you think of those numbers and what's the trade saying?
Well, I think you saw what the trade thought yesterday. I mean, you know, we took a miserable dive, and at the end of the day tried to come back a little bit. You know, today's trade was, I guess I would probably characterize it as being a typical day after a report that didn't have the information they really wanted. And so now you have everybody trying to figure out, is this the low? Do I want to buy? What do I want to do? And I think that's going to probably characterize today and probably even tomorrow. You know, the market, you got to have something to be able to trade on, and they certainly didn't give them very much yesterday.
So go through some of those numbers for me and let me know what they are and where you think we stand.
Well, one of the things that surprised me a little bit is the fact that we didn't see any adjustment to any planted acres at all, but we certainly did see an increase in yield per acre. You know, we went up to 169.9. That was a 0.4 of a bushel increase. That surprised the market. There's no question about it. We did have a drop on the carry-in. You know, we had more production, of course, because of the fact that, you know, they increased the yield. They also increased feed usage, but they reduced ethanol. So we ended up with a carry-out that is 62 million bushels higher than what it was on last month's report. You know, 62 million bushels is not what I would call a deal breaker, but it was enough for them to drop the average price by about a dime. And so when you looked at beans, same thing there. No adjustments in acreage. Big change, a half bushel change on yield, went up to 49.9. Man, that's just pretty amazing. And they dropped the carry-in, which just means that there's been better demand than what they thought there was. We had more production. They also, you know, the exports went up. And honestly, Todd, did you ever think that we were going to see exporting more beans than we do corn? I mean, I can't hardly believe it. You know, it's 400 million bushels more beans than corn is expected for this next year. So the carry-out went up by about 25 million bushels. The use went up by 25 million bushels, and carryout stayed the same. So everything pretty much even there. When you look at the deviations on the report, you know, I always like to dig a little deeper. And corn had a 5.1% deviation on a 14.184 billion bushel crop. That means we could be at 13.4 or 14.9. Quite a variation there. When you looked at the yield at 169.9, we could go all the way down to 161.2 or 178.5 and be within the deviation. And that means our carryout at the very end could be somewhere between 1.6 and 3.0. So what it says is, you know, this is not definitely not a definitive report. It is, again, just a report that's giving us a little bit closer deviations than what we normally see before this. And kind of an idea of what we're going to end up with for a crop. On beans, Abe, we're at 9.3% deviation. So on a 4.4 billion bushel crop, that means we could be between 4 billion and 4.8 billion. Yield-wise, 45.3 all the way up to 54.5. And so there's the carryout thing is really interesting because that's anywhere from 53 up to 887. And so I don't think we'll ever see 53, to be honest with you. I don't think we ever got below, I think it was 119 million all those years ago. But one of the things that came out too was some of the numbers from the FSA, and I thought that this was pretty interesting in itself. We saw prevented plant for corn so far reported at 955,000 acres. Biggest loss was in Kansas at 121,000 acres. Beans, 433,000 acres of prevented plant, 63,000 in North Dakota. That was the largest. And wheat, 616. Now, when you look at all the acres that have been reported so far, Todd, they've got 87.25 acres of corn. And that is 3.65 million acres less than what they're currently projecting we could be at. So I went back and looked at 2016. And on this same report last year, they were 3.2 million less than what we ended up with at the end. So they're not too far off. On beans, 88.6. That's only 884,000 acres lower than what they were expecting. And last year, we were 1.4 million acres lower than what we actually ended up with. So I guess if I look at this, it says to me that maybe the bean acres could maybe get higher than what they are at the moment. But nobody knows for sure, you know, what's going to happen. And so as we visit the world numbers, there they lowered the carry-in on corn, beans, and wheat. Again, they must have found more usage someplace along the line. The carryout was higher on corn, and yet it's 940 million bushels less than it was in 2016. So even though we saw the carryout move up, it was still less than what we had for this year. And beans and wheat, basically the carryout was lower, and it was lowered on this report, but is higher than what we had in 2016. So a very, very interesting report. A lot of information there that basically tells us we've got an idea of where we're going, but we're certainly not sure where it's going to be yet.
So we'll have some time before we really get into harvest, it appears. The crop progress numbers show everything's a bit behind. Producers, I guess, maybe have some time until we get to the end of the month and we see the grain stocks numbers and then the October report to make decisions. That'll give them, I guess, a little respite, I suppose. What else have you been looking at on the world scene that might make a difference?
Well, I was going to say, too, you know, well, one of the things that we've certainly run across, Todd, is a lot of variation in this crop. I just had some visitors down and, you know, they're north of Champaign, and you know they expect to be 200 to 220, but they got some of the rain that Champaign never got. So I think it just points out that it's the same thing in Nebraska, same thing when you talk to people in Minnesota. If you were lucky enough to get the rain, you've got a pretty darn good crop. And so you know you look at the. I talked to one of our fellows from Indiana yesterday, and he said his early cut beans still were running 60 bushel, and they haven't had rain since the 15th of July. And he said he was shocked, but he said, you know, had they gotten a rain, those same beans probably would have ran 75 bushel. So it's certainly a year of variation is what it is. Now you asked me what else I was looking at. Well, you know, I'm always trying to find some interesting stuff to let people chew on. And it looks like China's going to end sales of all gas and diesel cars. Now, when's that going to happen? They haven't set a date yet. France is doing the same thing. But I thought this was interesting. China is the biggest auto market by a number of vehicles sold. They sold 28 million last year. And, you know, so the changes are going to definitely affect the global market. And they're doing it because they want to curb the appetite for imported cars. Isn't that interesting? You know, we do the same thing here. We want to try and keep people out of the imported cars and people want to be in them. Electric and hybrid cars sales rose 2% in 2016 over 2015. They sold 336,000 vehicles, which was 40% of the global demand. Here in the U.S., we sold 159,000. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see how this ultimately impacts things. And I think it's are we going to go from where do we get gasoline to where do we get the stuff to make all of the batteries and all the charging stations and everything else? But they are going to roll out a plan to use ethanol in all their cars by 2020. So, you know, that I think is another interesting little side note. They're doing it because they really want to increase the demand for the industrial corn that they have. In other words, a lot of the junk that they've got around. And they want to clean up their smog. So there's always something happening everywhere in the world.
Thank you so much. Jackie Vakes, of course, is with Stuart Peterson. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on this Wednesday afternoon. We're now joined by Eric Wilcox. He's the equipment manager across a large part of the Midwest, part of Canada for Growmark FS. This morning, if you've been following my Twitter account, you know that I made a trip to Bloomington to the Growmark Learning Center to step into their simulator. This is a Rogator, relatively speaking, and I get to drive around. I did make it from the plant to the field and passed. It was 100%. I frankly thought I ran a stop sign, potentially, or at least ran through it before I got stopped and that I hit a field post. Fortunately, the computer said no, so there was no operator error there. I'm wondering, though, Eric, why it is that FS, the Growmark, felt that it was necessary to invest in a simulator for your applicators and drivers.
We're looking to prove that we're thinking ahead. We're looking at new technology. We're looking at creating something to develop current applicators, keep them interested, keep them developing, as well as pull in new talent. And with all that combined out there, what are we going to do? You ain't going to do the same PowerPoint slides over and over on downtime? We're going to have them clean the shop? Or do we want to pull something in like a simulator and really enhance the training and add to what we currently have?
You've had them in this simulator. How lifelike do they feel it is?
Everybody that has been on it has come off saying this is as real as it can get without being in it. So everybody's got high expectations to tell me it's not real when they get on. And when they get off, they're smiling and saying, yeah, it's pretty darn good. But we're always getting feedback and trying to make it better.
Do you as a company have more of a problem on the road or in the field as it relates to claims that might come along with accidents that the simulator is hopeful to help eliminate?
On the safety side, it's definitely on the road. On the claim side and money side, it's definitely in the field. So number one claim is running over crops. That's number one. How can we do better at that? And we can simulate that. We can enhance it. We can train, talk about to trigger when you get in the field of what's going on and how to recognize if you're doing something right or wrong. On the safety side, if you save somebody an injury, a phone call, it's paid for itself right there. So we're looking at both, but primarily right now, running over row crops or running over crops is our number one objective, try to lessen the insurance claims.
And what is the number one accident that happens on the road?
Getting hit from behind. So machine turning left. We spoke about it a couple times. You know, left with traffic behind you and traffic in front of you, and you've had your hazards on, but you flip the turn signal on. You've been turning left for 4 miles, and they're just tired of it. They come zooming around. You finally turn. T-bones are right there. That's probably our number one accident is the left-hand turn.
And I'm going to make a big leap of faith here and say the machine always wins in this situation.
A lot of the times it does, but there's a lot of damage in there that the operator has, you know, typically walks away, but there's a lot of damage. There's a lot of wheels getting knocked off.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Eric Wilcox is the equipment manager at Growmark. Jeff Bunting is a division manager. He would be Eric's boss. He now joins us. And I want to talk a little bit with you about how you decided to put this in place, how long ago, and what that process was like.
So this process started roughly 2 years ago, really going back and working with the local members. You know, for the last 10 years, we spent a lot of time elevating and put more focus on one of the great resources our system has, would be those guys that sit in those cabs and on those seats. As you kind of develop the overall curriculum, you know, we did a lot with kind of hands-on pumps and meters and application characteristics, operator styles, operator efficiencies. We were still missing kind of that one kind of ground truthing or that one area to help with the overall process of can they do the job? And, you know, again, when you're in March, April, May, June, a lot easier to go out there in the yard and get a sprayer and kind of drive it around. we're missing opportunities really in that November, December, January, February, before they go into the field and they actually do the application. Can we simulate the experience? And this is how it started, with an idea of can we do that? Can we build some sort of tool that a guy can sit into in the cold winter months? Maybe the guys that have been doing it for a number of years, maybe get knock the dust off, so to speak, or the new guy we just hired that's going to be in that sprayer in those busy times of the year to have some sort of way to say, hey, I can do this. This is how we do it.
So did GrowMark build it? Did you buy it? Was it a combination of things?
So it was we basically worked with a developer in Peoria, and you know, they're very good on the construction side and some of the large equipment, doing a lot of the simulations, and they were not in ag yet. And so we worked with them in regards to, can we build a simulator that looks like a sprayer? Just give us a cabin sprayer. Can you build it for us? And they've done a great job for us. And so I've also got to thank the FS members, because, you know, this simulator has got a nice price tag to it. We couldn't probably do without their support and building it from a standpoint of concept to the final product.
So for those who have been listening for a very long time, if you go back at the University of Illinois a long ways, and I'm going to make a lot of leaps of faith here that this is how we got there. In the early 90s, mid-90s, on campus, there was something we called the CAVE. You worked with Caterpillar to develop what a cab might look like and what an operator would see. I suspect, since you're working out of Peoria, that some of this has all gone into the background of it. I always look for a U of I type. Whether it has or hasn't isn't all that notable, other than some of that technology probably came out of a land grant somewhere. Now, given all of that, I want to know, on the applicator side, because folks are always wondering, you know, where do the applicators come from? How hard is it to keep them on board? Is this a career that they can use? Are you always on the hunt for them? Those sorts of things. And another item is, how broad an area do you actually cover? It's just not the state of Illinois.
That's correct. Boy, Todd, a lot of questions there in that segment. So, again, I like the ideas that if you can tie back to U of I, I'm okay with that. Any way that we can put a plug in for our great university. But again, you go back to the overall question. You know, if you ask any of the operation managers, you know, one of the challenges they have is recruiting that talent. You know, you think about finding people that can sit in those seats and in those cabs. It's hard work. I mean, when I started in my career a number of years ago, I won't give you the actual year, but, you know, I was in a spray coupe, 200-gallon tank, 40-foot boom, and said, hey, go spray this field. Well, that's a lot of stress to kind of process and do that. You know, our goal right now is, how can we help the FS members find some resources to be in those seats? And we view this as opportunity in regards to help kind of work with universities, work with the junior colleges. I mean, application career is very, very rewarding. The change that we've seen in the last 20 years has been remarkable. We'll see the same change in the next 20 years. This simulator really is that innovation and forward thinking that we see is very, very critical as we go into more complexity on the overall application side of the business.
And how large an area do you cover for GrowMark?
So again, we have we're not just Illinois, but again, our core states would be Illinois, Iowa, and Wisconsin, but we're also expanding upon in Missouri and in Indiana, Ohio, on the East Coast. So we're roughly, from my perspective on the CP side, roughly 40 states today.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Todd.
That, of course, is Jeff Bunting. He is with GrowMark. We're here at the GrowMark Learning Center outside of Bloomington, Illinois. When we come back, we'll talk with Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason on this Wednesday afternoon, coming to you today from GrowMark's FS Learning Center outside of Bloomington, Illinois, where I had a chance to drive a simulated Rogator, or that big applicator that runs through the fields putting herbicides on. I did make it from the plant to, of course, the field without really hitting anything, 100%. Yay for me passing. But now it's time to talk a little bit about the weather. And Drew Lerner is here. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, I had a good day in the field, relatively speaking here. But there is a little rainfall or at least some clouds in our part of the world. I take it those are the leftovers of Irma. Is that right?
That is correct. Irma continues to linger at this hour across several areas in the Midwest, but certainly it's nothing compared to what it had been, of course, and we are going to continue to see it kind of wimp out as we go forward through the next 24 to 48 hours. Seeing a lot of shower activity from Indiana down to the northern parts of Mississippi and Alabama, so it's still a fairly large area that this storm is still impacting, but it is winding down, and I don't think we'll see a lot of large amounts of rainfall anywhere in particular, and as we go forward through the next 2 days, it will head for the middle Atlantic coastal region. Behind it will be a nice ridge of high pressure, and that's going to be partially due to its exit and also partially due to Hurricane Jose. Jose, of course, is long ways out from the Bahamas off to the east and not going to have an immediate impact on the U.S., at least we hope not. What it will do is it will build a ridge of high pressure across the eastern part of the country, and that should stop additional storms from making it into the eastern Midwest, as well as the Delta and the southeastern states, and give a lot of folks a chance to start cleaning up, of course, after the recent hurricane.
So let's turn your attention to the Midwest in particular. It's been pretty cool, and there needs to be some heat to get these crops to finish the dry down and maturation process. They're running behind. Do we think we see some heat in the future, at least a few more degrees than what we've had?
Yeah, it will warm up. Once we get Hurricane Irma's remnants out of the way, we'll have more sunshine around, and we'll definitely allow for temperatures to get a bit warmer once again. Don't know that we're going to see summertime temperatures back, but we will be warmer than we are at the moment, and that'll be very helpful. Most of the rainy weather that will interfere with crop maturation is going to be in the western Corn Belt, and in particular the Northwest. Eastern parts of the Dakotas, Minnesota, maybe parts of western Wisconsin, and portions of northwestern Iowa will see a lot of cloudiness coming up over the coming week and waves of light rain coming as well. So the maturation environment for that part of the Corn Belt is going to be rather poor, and I think these crops will just be creeping along. They'll be a little bit warmer there than it will be in the eastern Midwest, but with all the cloudiness and the rain, it's really not going to help them any in this case. We're going to need it to dry down a little bit.
Thanks so much, Drew. We appreciate you taking the time with us today.
You bet. Safe travel.
That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Joins us on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the GrowMark FS Learning Center in Bloomington.